Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I originally got the title for my talk today from the Farmer's Almanac, which most of us city folk are not real familiar with. I mean, you guys may think it's easy coming up with brilliant titles week after week, but it's not. I have to get them from a lot of different places. And I got the talk title from that old saying, in the Farmer's Almanac that I first heard as a child, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. Everybody heard that pretty much? Okay. Is there anybody who has never heard that? Oh, good. Scott, one. All right, it's you. and where that came from originally was, I know the weather's been a little strange the last few years for a lot of different reasons, but traditionally the first week of March, as it was this week, is kind of cold. It was in the 40s around the 1st of March. It's cold and rainy, maybe a little ice or snow if you're living up north. But just a few short weeks later, here we are, what is it, the 13th? We're not even at the middle of March yet. The azaleas are starting, the buds are there and starting to peek out in my front yard. The daffodils are coming up. It's like a completely different world. In those few weeks, just those few weeks. But even though this old saying refers to the weather, there's another part of it that I found intriguing. And the part that got me thinking about the metaphysical implications of this statement was this idea of a lion, this big, ferocious, aggressive animal, changing effortlessly into a lamb, which is a symbol of gentle innocence and purity and peace and being childlike and all those kind of things, because these are two very different animals, and they symbolize, if you think about it, two entirely different states of being. Now, this is not the only place that those animals are compared or talked about. If you look back historically, a lot of the great empires, Syria was one, the great military empires were symbolized as the lion of the Middle East, whatever it is. And Jesus, when he was referred to afterwards, was the Lamb of God. So those phrases are always peace, war, at odds with each other. Most of us have heard the phrase from the Christian Bible. It's said in different ways, and it describes peace on earth as what? As the time when the lion will lie down with the lamb. Remember that? And that coming together, that's a very sweet image, that coming together of two completely different natures, the violent and the peaceful, represents a healing between all the natural enemies of the world, because lions and lambs do not traditionally make good playmates. Usually they are dinner companions, if you think about it, all right? Now, the problem is, even though most of us like this idea, at least in theory, about, you know, the violent and the peaceful sort of blending together and everything being nice and copacetic, we are a little bit skeptical about whether or not it would really work. Sort of like the Shiites and the Sunnis, what's going on in the Middle East, or the Protestants and the Catholics in Ireland when they were going through their stuff, Israel and the Arab states, all these different things. There seems to be too much distrust between these different groups, going back sometimes hundreds or even 1,000 years for it ever to work out. That's why some smartass once said, the time may indeed come when the lion lies down with the lamb, but the lamb won't get much sleep. Okay? So, here's a true story. All right? Around the turn of the century, there was a man by the name of P.T. Barnum. Everybody remember him? The Barnum and Bailey Circus. He was quite the consummate showman and the greatest show on earth, he used to call it. And he was looking for a bold new act for his circus. So after thinking about it and looking around and asking other people, he eventually came up with this idea. He got a big cage, and in this cage, with no partitions or anything, he put a lion, a leopard, and a lamb, all in the same cage, and he invited people to come in and see it. So everywhere he went, even though he had the elephants and the trapeze and the bearded ladies and all these different things, people would pay $1 each, which back 100 years ago was a lot of money, to look at these natural enemies living together peacefully. And they'd go away not just being entertained, they would go away with the feeling that maybe, just maybe, they themselves could actually start getting along with all the people that they didn't like. So it was a very, very powerful and effective and beautiful display. Until one day a newspaper reporter was talking to old P.T. off the record, supposedly, and asked if he was going to continue with this very beautiful and moving exhibit. And Barnum told him that he did, in fact, plan to continue the exhibit as long as the supply of lambs held out. All right. So anyway, when I started reading about all of this, here's what I started thinking about. In this world today, as spiritually minded people, is it better to be a lion or a lamb? And the answer, I'll tell you right up front, is the universal answer, which is, it depends. Okay. You see, we live in a world that tells us that we need to be aggressive. I was raised that way. We're constantly told that we need to keep pushing hard. We need to be in control. We need to make things happen. We have competition. Winning is important. We got to be the best at everything we do. That's how we teach our children. That's how my parents taught me. But on the other hand, in this teaching that a lot of us really enjoy, we have a slightly different philosophy that also seems to make a lot of sense. A philosophy that tells us we can change our world and our life without fighting, simply by changing the way we think about it. We've been told by a number of different spiritual teachers, including Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this one, that a calm, centered, thoughtful mind focused on the power and the presence of this thing that we call God is a much more effective means of changing our experience than trying to force the world to change using willpower and determination. So for me, the question becomes not which one of these is right or wrong or better or worse. The question becomes, how do we integrate these two very different ways of thinking? And I started thinking, maybe we can take a lesson from the Farmer's Almanac. Maybe our time and energy and our spiritual work would be better spent learning what we need to do to change an aggressive, sometimes angry and forceful consciousness into a peaceful and trusting consciousness. And that seems to make sense, at least to me. So that's what I want to get into today. I want to talk about the ability that we all have to deliberately change the way we are able to grow and the way we are able to live simply by changing our thoughts, which is the greatest spiritual power that we have. And I don't mean when I say this, just thinking different thoughts. A lot of people deal with it on a surface level. Change your thinking, you know, and then everything's going to be fine. I mean learning how to consciously and deliberately think in an entirely different way. An entirely different way. Because the truth is, we are all perfectly capable of making incredible changes in our consciousness, changes just as extreme as changing a lion into a lamb. And the changes that we make on the inside, if we do them the right way, will always result in some very positive changes in what we encounter on the outside. Because that's how everything in our life is created. As within, so without. All the teachers have told us this. All right? Now, you know, and if you don't, it's because you're not paying attention, we all know, that we live in a rapidly and constantly changing world. Angela was talking about change just a few minutes ago. And one of the greatest challenges we have is coping with that change, not just with the physical change, but trying to keep ourselves in balance while the change is happening. But we also have to recognize that as we approach every changing situation in our life, we do it with a certain attitude. Maybe good, maybe bad, whatever, but we all have a certain attitude. We approach every change in our life with a consciousness that reflects a whole lot of different things, all of which affect how we end up dealing with whatever that particular situation happens to be. We look at things that affect our attention, okay, which is where our attitude comes from, like our past experience, our level of confidence in whatever it is we're doing, our level of fear, that's another one. our expectations about what's going to happen and what's going on. All of these things can and do have a very significant effect on how we deal with the people and the events that we encounter. And this is important. If you don't remember anything else, remember these next couple things I'm going to say. The consciousness we bring determines the reality we create. Let me say that again. The consciousness we bring determines the reality we create. And the outcome of every individual interaction usually affects every other interaction down the line. That's very, very important. Now, Dr. Holmes calls these beliefs and opinions and expectations our attitude that we carry with us all the time. He had a term for it. He got from a man named Thomas Troward, who was one of his teachers or one of his inspirations. He calls it relative first cause in our life. That's kind of a technical term. God is first cause to our experience, but in my experience, I am relative first cause. I am God acting as me in my experience, right? And by this he meant that the state of mind that we come into a situation with will always shape the outcome of every life experience we have, even before we have the experience. You get it? That's very, very important. Let me give you an example. If we go into a new relationship, I know some of you have been in your relationships for a long time, but think back, or maybe a friendship, or if we go into a new job and we are completely focused on our own stuff, everybody know what your stuff is? Okay, that's shorthand. Instead of being open to other people and seeing ourselves as part of something greater, then that's probably how we're going to end up, alone with our own stuff. If that's the attitude we bring in. Or if we enter into a financial transaction, for example, and we are privately afraid, we don't tell anybody, but we're privately afraid that we might lose money that we don't believe we can afford to lose, we increase the likelihood of bringing that mental picture, that vision we have of losing money, into our physical experience. Because that's the level of consciousness that we're bringing into the mix. That's the attitude we're presenting. You see, unfortunately, what happens to most of us, to a lot of us, is this. We go through life, starting very, very small to where we are now, with a heart and a mind that has picked up a lot of different fears, whether that fear is expressed as anger or hatred or resentment, whatever it is, or just plain old paranoia. A lot of people got that too. Now, that fear could have come from anywhere. Doesn't really matter. Could have come from our parents years ago. Could have come from something we heard on Good Morning America just a few hours ago. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter where it came from. But what messes up our life is that we are accepting the thing we fear as real, as powerful. Okay? Which is pretty easy to do when the whole rest of the world is telling us that we should be afraid of that thing. And as a result, our consciousness of fear becomes so persistent that it can't help attracting into our life more of the thing we fear, which is bad enough. But here's where it gets even worse. Here's where we aggravate the situation. Instead of seeing the connection between these two things, the connection between the problem in our life out there and the consciousness we have that's creating it, we end up pointing to our problem as evidence that our fear was justified. We do it backwards, okay? So the next time we encounter a similar situation, our fear is even stronger because now it's reinforced and the consequences end up being the same or worse. Now the results of this are what Dr. Holmes and Judge Troward, Thomas Troward, calls a negative chain of causation. It's a very specific statement, a negative chain of causation. In other words, our fear causes us to create an undesirable result, and that undesirable result creates more fear, which in turn creates another undesirable result, and on and on and on. And if that's what we do all the time, most people live within chains of causation, our life never changes for the better. Which can be very frustrating, as we all know. Now, if Mother Nature worked that way, thinking like we do, winter would never end. Okay. It wouldn't because, well, I had winter, right, just got out of winter. I must be staying in winter. March would come in like a lion and go out like a lion. Nature would do that. Every storm would bring another storm. Now, I've known people who live like that. And so do you. They go from crisis to crisis in their life, from disaster to disaster. Every problem seems to feed on the problem before, and they can explain why this problem is related to that problem, which and it all goes back to your mother. Okay. And for the life of them, they can't, well, my mother, I'm sure not yours. For the life of them, they can't figure out why. You can't even explain it to them. You know, if it wasn't so sad, it'd be funny. But nature, notice, doesn't have those kinds of problems. And that's because the universal mind that creates nature, this intelligence that we call God, doesn't see anything it does as good or bad. Nature doesn't get all upset after a tornado or a hurricane or something like that, okay, with a whole lot of guilt and resentment and anger. It stays in balance. It stays in balance. And the reason for this is because nature, just like our life, whether we notice or not, moves in cycles. The storms, the seasons, March changing, all of these are part of natural laws, okay? All of the challenges in the same way, just like the challenges of all the challenges we face in our life, are logical outcomes of the way we use our mind. So the best way, the most intelligent way, to get through any of our life changes successfully is by making conscious and deliberate use of the law to create something better. In other words, when we have a problem, even though we may or may not understand exactly how we got ourselves into that problem, into the mess we're in, we are always capable of using the wisdom that is already ours to get our life back in balance. And if at the same time we happen to learn something better so we don't have to go through it again, so much the better. Anyway, the more I thought about it, getting back to the talk here, a lion is really an excellent symbol for the way some of us complicate our life as we move through it. We walk into an unfamiliar situation, whether it's work, relationship, whatever it is, like we own the place, all right? Like we have all the right answers. We don't have to pay attention because we have experience. We know what's going on, and we don't need to take advice from anybody. Or what's even more common and socially acceptable among intelligent, self-sufficient people, like most of us probably are, we try to do everything ourselves without asking for help for anyone. Why? Because we trust people? No. We try to do it or because we don't trust people? No. Because we are afraid of what other people might think. We're afraid to look like we don't know what we're doing. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that confidence doesn't have its place. Confidence does have its place. It helps to move through life with a certain amount of self-esteem. I've been accused of having more than enough myself on time. But there's a very thin line between a peaceful and calm sense of self-confidence and intellectual or spiritual arrogance. A very, very thin line. It's like a story, old story, some of you have probably heard it, and it's a lion in the jungle comes into a clearing, and he goes up to a zebra, and he says, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the zebra says, "You are, O mighty lion." Then he goes over to a monkey, and he says, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the monkey says, "You are, O mighty lion." So the animals are all kind of moving away. They don't know what this guy is going to do. So he looks around and the lion walks up to an elephant and says, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the elephant looks over and wraps his trunk around him, picks him up by the neck, whacks him on the ground a few times, hits him against a tree and throws him in the mud. And the lion gets up and says, "Well, just because you didn't know the answer, you didn't need to get upset." Okay? You see, a lamb would never have gotten in that situation. A lamb has more sense than starting things out that way. There is a quiet confidence, if you want to call it that, it's a spiritual thing, that comes from knowing that we are all part of the one mind, the same creative power. And it's in our best interest to move through life being aware of this. But instead of just having faith in ourselves as an individual who knows all the right answers, we should understand this as having faith in a law. Faith in a universal power expressing through us and through every other single person we meet. You see the difference between the two? There's a big difference, all right? If we are constantly aware that all the wisdom of God, all the time, is coming at us from every direction, depending on our attitude. I mean, billboards you see, things you hear on TV, stuff you see on the internet. If we get clear that we are responsible for how we receive and how we react to this stuff, then we will start to treat the entire world with more respect. With more respect. In fact, that's what the teacher Jesus meant when he said in the Sermon on the Mount, "The meek shall inherit the earth." Not the timid and the wishy-washy, the meek. Having respect for other people. So we won't have to build ourselves up for taking credit for everything good that happens to us and trying to avoid blame or blame somebody else for everything bad that happens to us. Andrew Young had a great statement. I don't know if he originated it, but he's the first person I heard it from. He said, "It's amazing how much can get accomplished if nobody needs to take credit." It's a great statement. If we can establish that kind of a centered consciousness, then when we do encounter some challenging situation in any part of our life, we will be more prepared to move through it calmly and peacefully and to come through it having learned something useful that's going to make our life more enjoyable in the future. Now, the good news is this attitude doesn't just apply to dealing with problems. It works the same with opportunities. Whatever kind of a situation we encounter, if we are calm and peaceful and ready to listen and pay attention, we can create something that is like our attitude. All right? So, in order to do this, there are three things. I wrote down three things here. Some of you like to take notes. You may listen to the talk later. That we need to be clear about. Number one, first thing, we need to remember that God, this intelligence, is completely present everywhere, all the time. That's the first thing, very basic core of this teaching. That means whatever is going on in our life, or in the world around us for that matter, in the middle of the worst disaster that we can imagine, or the most exciting opportunity that we could ever attract, there's always something in us that knows exactly how to respond, that knows exactly what to do, to bring us to a place in consciousness where fear, especially other people's fear, has no power over us, to a peaceful place, a calm place, a humble place. We don't like that word, but it's a very spiritual word. And as we move forward into our life from that place, we'll be able to focus on a greater truth that shines out from behind all the problems. Second, I guess that's two fingers. Okay, second, we need to remember that we are the only ones who need to focus our own thoughts and beliefs on the direction we need to go. No one else can do it for us, not even God. Not even God. Our responsibility is to focus our thoughts. God is providing us the ideas, but we have to open ourselves up to the best ideas we can have. I mean, other people can help us, but we have to make the decision. And third, once we've reminded ourselves that all the power we need is right where we are, that's number one, and once we've made the conscious decision to use this power, that's number two, then we need to act. Then we need to follow through on our decision. Once we decide to change our mind and keep it changed, as Emmett Fox used to say, then we need to move forward and act in our life in ways that are consistent with whatever new direction that we have chosen. If we do that consciously and consistently, what we are going to find to our surprise and delight is that we have effectively broken any negative chain of causation that was causing us to stay stuck in the old set of problems. We don't just shift that chain of causation, we break it completely, and we start a new one from an entirely different place. Now, once we make this a habit in our life, that is, all the time in every situation automatically, that's what a habit is, we're going to find ourselves moving through challenges as easily as Mother Nature moves from winter to spring. All right. before you leave, I'm going to give you some homework. Are you ready? Uh-oh, Angela says. You know me a long time. Some practical, real-world homework. Okay? Some of you have probably noticed and realized that over the next 8 months, Angela mentioned this, we are going to be exposed to all the different experiences that go into electing a new president. Everybody aware of that? Good, good, okay. If you think it's bad now, just wait, okay? We are going to be inundated, even more than we already are, with angry rhetoric, negative, no matter who's involved. Angry rhetoric, negative advertising, truths, half-truths, and flat-out lies for the next 8 months. Everywhere we look, the television, the internet, digital billboards, newspapers, the people around us, all of it's going to be swirling through this stuff. And unfortunately, even though we may want to, most of us are not in a position to go through the day with earplugs in and a blindfold on. All right? People, including us, if we're not careful, are going to be angry and stressed and afraid, all right, because of what they hear and what they see, all right? People are going to be angry at people who disagree with them. We've already seen that, all right? So outside of moving to Costa Rica, what do we do? What is the most spiritual way to deal with this stuff that we're all going to be dealing with? Well, that's what I've been telling you for the last 20 minutes, okay? Stay calm. Breathe, okay? Allow others their opinion. Smile. And don't let the noise around you feed the lion inside of you. Practice peaceful thinking when you hear this stuff. You know where peaceful thinking starts? In here. Practice peaceful listening. Where does that start? Same place. Right in here. Have compassion for other people's fear. Forgive their anger. And do not embrace their ignorance by arguing with it. That's important. Be in the world but not of it, as it said in the Bible. Remember, 1, 2, and 3. God is everywhere. Even in Donald Trump's hair. Okay. Only we can choose how to focus our mind. That's number 2. And that we can always choose how to respond to the insanity of the world around us. And once you do that, put on your lamb suit and go about your business. Go about your business. Now, the same process works in every part of our life. It works in creating a loving relationship, friendships, family, job. It works in creating a body that feels healthy and strong. It works in creating prosperity and financial security. We have the ability to change the way we deal with the world from a turbulent, aggressive, angry approach, the lion approach, to one that's calm and peaceful and trusting, to a consciousness that's always centered in the middle of the smooth flow of life, what the Buddha calls the middle path. We can change very easily from a lion to a lamb, but we don't have to do it just this month. We can do it this month, next month, anytime we want. And as we make the change, we're going to notice something very, very interesting. We will notice that our life becomes easier. We'll feel a greater sense of peace and confidence because we will no longer be letting the anger and the fears of the world become our anger or our fears. Because now we know something better about ourselves, and we know something much better about the world. And we will be using this knowledge in the best possible way, which is by living it every single day. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Okay. Thank you. All right. Let's take a moment or two while Tom gets situated. Take a breath. And allow yourself in this moment, in spite of whatever you may have been dealing with before you got here today, this past week, whatever it is, or what you have to do this afternoon, in this moment, allow yourself to be in a place of peace. A place of calm. We live in the center of God, and God lives in our center. All one. And as we recognize this, as we allow ourselves to be in the world and to look out at the pictures, the images that we call life, we allow ourselves to choose how we create, what we create, and how we participate. Knowing this, we are able to move through the world, being kind to every person we meet, to not responding to anger with anger, to not argue from a place of self-righteousness, but to discuss, looking for a place of consensus, to not judge others who may not be saying the things we think they should say, or doing the things we think they should do in the way we think they should do them. Not getting caught up in any of that. We don't need to. That is our choice, whether we get caught up in it or not. So I, for one, and I welcome for all of you, allow myself to relax. To relax about the election, to relax about all the things we're going on in the world, to relax about any conflict going on in our own life. But as I relax, I do not ignore. I allow myself to participate with the world in the best way I can, which is by bringing a higher consciousness with me wherever I go. That starts within, and as I show up with a higher level of awareness and a greater sense of peace of mind, the world around me starts to reflect the same. I create a better space by knowing that a better space is always possible for me and for everyone around me. Knowing this, I give thanks for this greater awareness. In gratitude, I go into the world, recognizing we are all one with God. And as I accept this consciousness, this awareness as my own, I release it to everyone around me. I release it wherever I go, whatever I do. I release it into consciousness and let it do its good and perfect work for me from this moment on. Join me in saying, and so it is.